Haven't spoke to him since CPAC. Ladies and gentlemen, prolific author of such works as Freedom in Chains, The Attention Deficit Democracy, and other great works, the entire Bovard Library, James Bovard. Hello, James.
Hey, Brian. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate
Great to have you. James joining us from an undisclosed location in Rockville, Maryland, just out of gun range of the Washington, D.C. streets, but not out of range of Obamacare.
Well, I'm looking forward to that individual mandate to see how many people they put in prison on that.
Yeah, I think it's discriminatory. Do they don't have an individual woman date, do they? No.
That's a good point.
So I'm just saying. Point. Speaking of good points, if you check out the latest edition of the Christian Science Monitor, you'll find a very spiffy article. The 2010 sentence, "Will your answers stay private?" And what's so beautiful about this ties in well with the conversations we were having over the past couple of days. Now, ordinarily, when Mr. Bovard sets about to write things, they usually turn into great books full of information. And but I find, Jim, when you get narrowed down into magazine articles, your pearls are more in sentences. They're not in paragraphs and entire pages. Like, for example, a surplus of lies naturally produces a deficit of trust, and how true that is whenever you're talking about the federal government.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I was watching that State of the Union address that Obama gave in January, mm-hmm. and his big theme about how there was so bad that America had a deficit of trust, and he was implying a deficit of trust in government. And, you know, well, maybe it's because the government's told so damn many lies over the last few decades.
Well, I couldn't agree more. And, you know, I did not know this. I saw in the bottom of this piece that back in your younger days, you actually worked as a census taker in 1980.
And for which I'm still doing penance. And actually, I was out in the Midwest, and I was living in Carbondale, Illinois, down there in the Little Ozarks.
Wow.
And I was just knocking around there, and it was a pretty good gig because it seemed like about every third person that I ran into, especially if I was doing trailer parks, people would start out telling me how much that they hated the government, and they'd end up giving me a cold beer.
Wow. So that's where you developed that taste.
It was Pabst Blue Ribbon, but but I still enjoyed it. I enjoyed it.
Well, the thing that's unique about this piece, and the thing that I think everybody should remember, because we've been having a lot of conversations here, as I think probably a lot of talk stations have around the country, about, you know, how much of this gobbledygook do we have to recognize and obey with this new census that's coming out right now. They're bragging about the fact that it's only just 10 questions. There's nothing about your Social Security number or your credit cards or how much money you make or how many toilets you got or whatever. It's pretty much right down the line, damn close to exactly what the Constitution requires. But it's not so much the questions they ask. It seems to be the problem with where the information goes after you answer them.
Well, I've had some good laughs watching this census PR campaign where they're talking about that people should not have any worries that the information would be abused because that would be against the law. And I'm sitting here thinking, you know, here we are in 2010, and by God, there are some Americans who still say, well, the government wouldn't do that then. I mean, it's sort of like 1956 watching Andy Griffith.
Well, it does go back, I mean, in your piece here for the Christian Science Monitor, a little tip of the slung there.
It's been a long week, hey?
Yeah, poof. You just got finished watching the State of the Union. I'd go like crap over the weekend with that that healthcare nonsense. But here's the thing. You actually trace it back to World War II, where the census information was pretty readily available, even though they said it wasn't, made pretty much available to the feds for all sorts of nefarious things.
Well, the Census Bureau helped the Army and the FBI round up more than 100,000 Japanese Americans for concentration camps. And this was a very controversial roundup because, you know, it's so rare to find a case where FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover, he said that was nonsense. He said there was no reason to lock up these Japanese Americans. There was no threat from them, but it was good politics, so Roosevelt rounded them up. And the Census Bureau was key to that. And for 60 years, the Census Bureau lied about its role in that. Some professors and researchers found some evidence in 2000 and basically forced them to admit their hands were dirty. But the Census Bureau kept saying that the Census Bureau had never given individual names and addresses to the government for law enforcement purposes. Well, it turned out in 2007, the same two college professors found a number of cases from World War II where the Census Bureau had done just that. So basically, the Census Bureau lied for over 60 years about what it did, but they're trying to make us think that since they stopped lying in 2007, now they're trustworthy.
Well, not true, because it wasn't just there around between World War II and today. There was a couple of other spiffy opportunities for the government to dig down deep and shovel that information off. And although, as you've pointed out in Attention Deficit Democracy and others, that the Bush betrayal and so on, all these things like with the Patriot Act that seem innocent, innocuous, and maybe even patriotic on the surface, once you turn that kind of power over to the government through legislation, all hell can break loose, and a lot of innocent people, in fact, mostly innocent people, are more exposed than the so-called bad guys.
Yeah, right now there are more than a million names on the terror watch list, on the various federal terror watch lists, and it'd be very easy to take the names from the census and match them with that. And if for some reason the government decides it wants to do a roundup at some point in the future, this could make it easier. But it's funny to see this is almost like a litmus test as far as people's duty to trust government. And it's funny to see so many liberals being indignant at any suggestion that the government has done some horrendous things with this information in the past and people should be dubious now. It's funny to see the outrage at the basic idea and to see how many editors would shudder at any suggestion the Census Bureau could be used again for a mass roundup of Americans.
Well, do you get the sense, though, when you talk on other programs and all the rest, I mean, do you get the sense that maybe the American people are starting to wake up to this? Do you think that maybe especially since the Obama administration, but even before that, all these new toys, all this new legislation, all these things that go rocketing through the process and have signings or executive orders or what have you, is the citizenry starting to get a sense that there's something rotten in the state of D.C.?
I'm supposed to say something uplifting here, right?
No.
Okay. that's a good question, and it's interesting. It is encouraging that more people are speaking out and more people are taking the streets and saying that they're vehemently opposed to letting politicians have more control over their lives. And that's what that health care debate came down to, whether politicians should have penalties and more mandates to send you or other people to prison for not buying health insurance or for other things. However, overall, I'm not really convinced that more Americans as a large percentage have recognized the danger of political power.
But and to the extent that the government gets more power and the people have less interest, of course they're not based on a strong education, and of course they have that tremendous influence of contagious apathy that is overriding them. And there are an awful lot of people, not a majority, thank goodness, but at least if you're to believe the polls. Awful lot of people think that this, like this healthcare thing, is just peachy. It's just terrific, and all of the power and information and control that the government will have over them is not such a bad thing. It'll be free for them.
Well, it's basically an engraved invitation for them to live at other people's expense. It goes back to what H.L. Mencken said about Roosevelt's New Deal. Mencken said that the New Deal divide Americans between those who work for a living and those who vote for a living. And this is one aspect of the health care reform. You're going to have a lot more people with their hands out for government benefits. It's going to make it easier for the Democratic Party to organize these people. Franklin Roosevelt was explicit that part of the goal of Social Security was to make people more grateful to the government. And people that get far more than what they pay in, no wonder they're grateful. But the politician can use the votes from those people to put fetters on everybody else.
Well, therein lies the problem. The promoting of dependency, while usually laid at the feet of the Democratic Party, is really now that we've seen that the Republicans are not going hell bent for leather to get this thing repealed or revoked. I mean, they're going to use it as a campaign slogan. But already you've seen just those opening days. Oh, we're going to tear them up. We're going to run them out. We're going to go there. They're not going to do that. It's a really neat entitlement program. Someday the Republicans will be back in power, and they'll be able to play with the big toy by themselves.
They will be able to expand it in certain ways that benefit certain groups or certain industries and makes it easier for the GOP to get campaign contributions and votes.
There you go. I find that fascinating. But I also find your encouragement in the in your piece here, the Christian Science Monitor. Where was it? With respects to the only answering those questions that are constitutionally required, like what I did, to American, fold it up, send it in. That was it. The two people in the House, and we're Americans. Thank you very much. But as you point out, boy, I love this line, citizens are not obliged to pave the data highway for Leviathan's next intrusion into their lives, which is exactly what you're doing when you continue to do obeisance to the vacuum cleaner of information that the government runs on a regular basis.
Well, and the thing that upset me most about that census form, it was that I didn't have the option to check that I was Huguenot.
Yeah, what about that?
There is a word that's going to fly over. You know, it'd be fine to know to know the exact percentage of that flew over their heads, but French descent. Let's just a frog. How about that?
I think Huguenot's good. It'll help out the next Scrabble game. But it's just like there's a lot of things like that that people miss. For example, this new tanning tax that you've heard about. I find that to be discriminating against white people.
A tanning tax.
Yeah, if you go to get one of those tanning beds, you know, those tanning salons, where you draw up in, you get your tan. There's going to be a tax now on that fee. That's all part of this healthcare thing. It kicked in immediately. That's one of the taxes there to help pay for your new future free healthcare, Jim. Especially these young ladies who go to the tanning booths, these tanning salons. There's now a tanning tax. But as I noted here yesterday, who goes there besides white people? There's got to be something discriminatory about that.
I wonder if there's going to be some kind of tax on the body waxing.
Hmm. Well, see, that wouldn't be discriminatory.
I was trying to set you up for a zinger there, but it didn't work.
Well, it's a family radio station there, Jim.
Right.
I wish we could go with that. Hey, listen, one thing before we do have to go is I was noticing here at Libertarian Party of Ohio website that a sartorially resplendent James Bovard is going to be keynote speaker for the Ohio Libertarian Party's convention April 10th and 11th in Columbus, OH.
Well, and the thing that's really bringing people in is who they're having as an MC that night. Brian Wilson is the MC for that for the state convention of the Libertarian Party just outside of Columbus, the second weekend in April.
Well, it's going to be a hoot. I think the
free
big
beer. Well, no, wait.
But I tell you what, if you got a copy of Attention Deficit Democracy, a number of copies of which we were able to give away as prizes here at WSPD, come on down, and I can pretty much assure you that with a reasonable amount of persuasion, Mr. Bovard will be happy to sign it for you.
Heck, I'd be happy to sign it free.
Well, there you go. Well, there you see. Like I said, very expansive, very wonderful. I mean, it's as free as health care. Jim Bovard will be signing this.
And much less regulation.
That is for sure. Jim, thanks a lot for the piece. Thanks a lot for the time. Look forward to seeing you in a few weeks down in Columbus.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Brian. Good
Always
luck.
Always a
there.
Hoot. You bet. See you later. Jim Bovard. And it's in the Christian Science Monitor, the 2010 sentence, will your answers stay private? In a word, probably not. But read the article anyway. It's highly informative and moderately entertaining from my good friend Jim Bovard.